Hi everyone. Welcome to the talk. This talk is about performance diagnosis in databases. And I am Partha. I'm a principal engineer in AWS, specifically in the database services organization. And this talk is the work of a large team. It's not just the two of us. And these are the folks who worked on it. Some of the folks are in the room, Bhavan and Balaji, who are named in the deck as well. And you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah. So, hi, I'm Alolita. I'm also a principal focused on open source at AWS. And again, I work on Open Distro for Elasticsearch as well as other open source projects. And again, looking forward to interacting with all of you on open source questions, you know, and the performance analyzer and Open Distro for Elasticsearch. So I'll just go into, you know, a brief overview of Open Distro. How many of you use search in your applications? Yes, many of you do. Hi, Ted. And basically, for those of you who use Elasticsearch or may be familiar with the Lucene stack, as you know, there's Solr, and of course, there's also Elasticsearch on top of it. So Elasticsearch, the Open Distro, which we actually launched earlier this year in March, is a downstream distribution of Elasticsearch, and it is fully Apache 2 licensed, and every component in it has some really cool features that have been added to the basic Elk stack or the Elasticsearch, Logstash, Kibana stack. Some of the key features here are security, and you know, you can go and check out the code, alerting, which enables your you know, data to be alerted upon and monitored. SQL, which enables you to be able to query your logs and analytics data. And the performance analyzer, which is what we are going to deep dive into today to get deeper visibility into some of understanding some of the system level diagnostics and metrics. When your cluster for search, which is specifically Elasticsearch, is what you're using. So I just wanted to do a shout out. You can take a photo of this, you know, because it's all the links for the open source project. And we have discussion forums. I'd love to have more of you participate in the Open Distro for Elasticsearch project. We'd love to have you on the code level in terms of the community you're contributing into. We actually have a community area where, you know, repo where you can actually contribute issues, whether those are from you yourselves or if you're having any customer issues, for example, with the Elk stack. The project website, there's extensive amounts of technical documentation available, so that's something that I'd love for you to go and check out. PerfTop, which is a component of the performance stack that we're going to talk about, and of course the performance analyzer code, which is, again, 100% Apache 2, and you can go and bookmark it in order to get involved. We are also very interested in kind of getting more technical contributions back to our blogs and our blog posts. So if you're using any, you know, use cases and scenarios for performance or for security or alerting or, you know, SQL, different kinds of analytics, you know, features that you're using, again, give us a holler if we'd love to feature you. And you can even, you know, we're happy to link you even from our blogs. Again, it's a fully open source project, so really would love to have you contribute. I'd also like to do a shout out to our one of our senior managers who's here, our engineering manager, Bhavan. Needless to say, we'd love to have more engineering contributors on the project as well as on our teams. So if you're interested, please go and find Bhavan. If you want to do a shout out. Again, I'll switch it over to you, Parsa.
So the rest of the talk is going to be about performance diagnosis and in the context of Elasticsearch. There are essentially two sets of ideas. This is not the agenda of the talk itself, but it's the two ideas that I'm going to present and talk about, which is observability and root cause analysis in the context of databases. So the talk is going to be in general about distributed databases and how to implement real-time performance diagnosis primitives as a system on top. But the implementation that we are going to discuss today is specific to Elasticsearch, but the ideas, needless to say, apply to any database. So Elasticsearch, how many of you guys have used Elasticsearch? I'm sure half of us are from Amazon itself. So it looks like most of us did. Elasticsearch is an unstructured database or an unstructured data store. It can essentially index documents, but it has to be you have to give it the schema. It's a schema on write. And it's not a traditional database in the sense it doesn't support relational algebra or a relational data model. It doesn't support transactions or asset guarantees. It doesn't even support durability. It's an eventually consistent database. But what it really guarantees or what it is designed for is to support real-time views of the data. So the, by default, within 1 second of writing a document to Elasticsearch successfully, you will be able to read it and query it across the corpus of documents that are already written. So that's the guarantee that it's essentially providing. And it provides low latency, high throughput semantics or SLAs compared to traditional relational databases as well. The workload and the use cases of Elasticsearch are either search or log analytics, and log analytics is the growing segment of data and users that are using Elasticsearch lately. And log analytics is a write-heavy workload. Essentially, the use case is where a customer streams all of their logs across, let's say, their 500,000 or 1,000,000 machines in the data center into this particular data store. And so it's write-heavy, it's real-time data, the logs are generated, and within some bounded time, they are pushed over to Elasticsearch and indexed there. And mostly append-only, so they don't have updates, although the database itself supports updates. And they have dashboards. It gives dashboarding capabilities. They have essentially canned queries that are generated from those dashboards. So the APIs are essentially ingest and query. And you can do bulk ingestion where you send thousands of documents in one API call. And they also have some cluster management APIs. So the physical layout of an Elasticsearch cluster, there are at least two kinds of nodes that typical production cluster would have. You have data nodes and you have master nodes. And the data, it provides an abstraction on the data. So any document that you send to Elasticsearch, you have to create an index. So the index contains a corpus of documents. And in terms of storing the data, the cluster essentially creates partitions of the data on the data nodes. And these partitions are called shards. So an index consists of one or more shards that are distributed across the data nodes. The master nodes keep track of the cluster metadata, the cluster state, changes in the cluster state, changes in the data model, and so on. So they don't fall in the critical path of reads or writes in any way. So we are all database users. And this is a common problem or a common pain point across all database users and customers. The problem is that databases are very complex systems. You have, this is a diagram from a recent tech report from Berkeley, well-known authors in databases. This actually abstracts out many of the components in the database. It's not showing the entire set, but even in what it shows, this is a pretty significant number of components and also pretty significant in the complexity and the size of the code that goes behind each of the components, like the query processing, the query optimization, the storage layer, the replication, the transaction management, of course, the database management itself. Given that it's a complex implementation and a complex system, the main problem with database users is they send a workload and the workload is not predictable in terms of throughput, in terms of latencies, in terms of concurrency. And the typical problem they tend to ask is, why is it slow? Why is there a problem? And in most cases, you don't even know that there is a problem until much later. And the kinds of diagnosis questions that we are essentially trying to target is, queries around why is my search workload slow, or why is my ingestion throughput lower than what it used to be the day before? And going a step ahead, how can I provision the cluster, and how can I reprovision the cluster given the current set of problems? So that all boils down to this one question of trying to identify in real time what are the problems, what is this subset of resources that is constrained or under-provisioned or not provisioned correctly in the database. And taking it a step further, distributed databases, they span multiple nodes that are connected over the network, and so the performance problems, the ways in which the cluster breaks, the ways in which the cluster slows down, are combinatorial in nature. It's no longer this one machine with a few modules, but the mix and match across the network makes it much harder to diagnose these performance problems. And the combinatorial explosion makes it even harder to even understand if there is a problem. And on top of it, these problems span multiple layers. So you have the physical resources like hardware and network in the bottom. Then you have virtualization layers like hypervisor, you have the guest OS, and then Elasticsearch in particular runs on Java, so it's a JVM stack on top of the operating system, and then you have the database layers. And database itself is a complex entity, a complex system in this stack. So that's about the complexity of the problem. I wanted to cover a little bit on the typical low-level architecture. This is at the level of the actual code in terms of threading, multi-threading, and how the code is structured or modularized. And there are two kinds of architectures, and the reason I'm covering this is because we essentially take home a point from both of these architectures to build diagnosability. So the first kind of architecture, and this is something that Elasticsearch fits very well, is called a staged event-driven architecture. It's a well-known paper from the 90s. And this is a collection of architectures where the work that is done by the database is split into different pieces. And each piece, they essentially build what is called a stage to do that work. And a stage consists of essentially a sequence of a single queue or multiple queues and a thread pool. And they compose all of these stages together. In the case of Elasticsearch, for example, the very first stage is the network I/O, where the customer is or the user is sending a read or a write request or a management request. And depending on the kind of request, it sends it to the next stage. So reads go to reads, queries, writes go to writes, everything else goes to other work. And then they are split into smaller units of work as a function of the shards that are supposed to be read or written from. And that is the shard write and shard read stages. And it continues, and these stages now get into the rest of the cluster through the network and so on. So this is a functional architecture in terms of how it is composed. On the other hand, there is a set of architectures that are composed by splitting it into the resources, the physical resources that are being used to do the computation or the storage that the customer is trying to do. So in this particular case, the stages are directly talking about the resources like network I/O, the disk I/O, the scheduler in the operating system or in the database that is talking to the OS and so on. And of course, there's a memory management resource as well. The difference between these two architectures is that the first one is more scalable. The second one allows us to do performance isolation, because that is where all of the work comes and gets multiplexed. So why am I presenting these two architectures? The main reason is that both these staged architectures give us one common property. Every thread that is executing some unit of work is executing an atomic unit of work that corresponds to some user request or some asynchronous work that is happening in the database. So that logically leads us to how do we build performance diagnosis. And the next one-third of the talk is about observability, and then I'll talk about root cause analysis. So the overall goal of the system that we were attempting to build is to accurately pinpoint performance problems that are happening in this distributed database in real time. And in particular, our goal is to measure fine-grained resource usage. We want to cover the entire stack, that is the database and everything below. And we want to diagnose at the level of a resource. And a resource is not just physical resource such as a disk or the CPU or the memory bus or anything on the lower layer, but it can include abstract resources such as the operating system schedulers, the paging memory management, and it can include virtual resources. And then it can include resources that are really abstractions that the database provides to the user. For example, Elasticsearch partitions the data into atomic units called shards, and the shard is the unit at which compute and storage actually happens in the database. And that's an abstract resource. There is no physical resource that is assigned to a shard. And we also want to cover those kinds of resources to be able to diagnose problems, for example, at a shard level, which is the most fine-grained unit of work that the Elasticsearch cluster does. So the typical way databases have done have exposed performance of the database itself was through metrics, and most of the metrics that they typically expose are informational metrics. These are essentially talking about what the database is currently executing or what it has executed in the past. They don't talk about they don't give metrics for diagnosability. And the goal behind metrics for diagnosability is to allow the user to understand why the performance is bad or whether the performance is bad in the first place. So our design is essentially to build diagnosability into the database. And we focus on resources of all kinds, from physical to virtual to abstract resources that the database exposes. And we want to break it down fine-grained into resource problems at a workload or operation level and at the data level, and of course in very small windows of time. So that brings us to the first half of the system, which is observability. The goal of observability is to do measurements, and the measurements are around fine-grained resource usage of the work that the database does. The high-level idea in our observability design is to construct two timelines of all work that the database does and join them. And I'll cover what those two timelines are. So for each thread in the database across all of these thread pools, each thread, as I mentioned earlier, we exploit this one fundamental property of all architectures in databases, which is that every thread does an atomic unit of work that could be some part of a larger set of work and moves on and picks up the next from the queue. So given that, we can essentially capture a timeline of what units of work the database or that particular thread does for each thread. So given a thread ID I, we capture the timestamps of each unit of work. In this case, W1 and W2 are two units of work. For example, a bulk request or a search request or a bulk request that was broken down for a single shard, or a search request that was split into a single shard. Those are atomic units of work that a thread in Elasticsearch does. And we are capturing what units of work the thread is doing for every thread. We are capturing the metadata around them, like what is the shard ID, what is the index name, and so on, and what is the node, of course, on which it's executing, and the start and end timestamps of each unit of work. For the same thread, we also capture an operating system view of the resource utilization of that particular thread, and even a JVM level view of the resource utilization. So the way we do that is we split the timeline of the thread into small fine-grained intervals. In our implementation, it is 5 seconds. And for each resource, for example, CPU is a resource and we capture CPU utilization. The memory management in the kernel is a resource and we capture the page fault rates. The disk I/O is a resource. The JVM heap is a resource. We capture the heap allocation rates and so on. So each of these R1, R2, and so on are basically resources and measurements of resources. So for each resource, for example, for CPU utilization, we capture the utilization in fine-grained time intervals of 5 seconds. And we do that for every resource that this thread is utilizing. Join these two together, that is what the observability does. So if you put these two together, what you can do now is construct a timeline of what each unit of work in the database actually uses of the underlying resources, of the Java heap, of the CPU, of the memory manager, of the OS scheduler, and so on. So the first, in terms of getting closer to the implementation, the first thing that we do is we created a lightweight library that exposes an interface to the database to each thread to add or emit events and the metadata around those events. So, for example, you can emit an event for a particular query or a particular part of the query that is executing for a single shard, and that is the event type, and you can emit all the metadata for that event. So this call internally captures the timestamp, and it captures the thread ID for that particular event. We also capture per-thread stack traces because we run on the JVM. Now, the reason we do that is, of course, we can do sampling-based profiling, but it also is a proxy for the unit of work the database does. In case we cannot modify some of the threads, for example, JVM internal threads, we use the stack traces to capture and label the units of work based on the stack trace itself. And that allows us to assign the resource utilization view at the code level. So taking a step back, the logical organization, so this is essentially how the block level view of the system looks. So on the left, we have the database processes. This is the OS kernel. As I said, we capture two timelines for every thread. So there is an event capture timeline and a resource measurement timeline for every resource. And these two are joined together in the observability component. Now, in some runtimes, like the Java runtime, where we don't have the actual operating system thread ID, we essentially need a translation layer. So periodically, we construct a map between the Java thread IDs to the OS task ID. So this is not necessary in all runtimes, but in runtimes that virtualize something such as thread IDs, we need a translation layer. So all of this put together is essentially how we construct the resource utilization for everything that the database does. So on the implementation side, we have this is how we built on Elasticsearch. So this is within a single node. This is a single JVM, Elasticsearch JVM. And Elasticsearch has a plugin architecture where we can capture events at every thread level. And those are done through callback functions. And we separate out the observability processing into capture on the Elasticsearch side and everything else, like constructing the timeline, constructing the combined view of resource and event timelines into an async process on the side. And that sidecar process allows us to be fault tolerant and decouple performance issues that Elasticsearch itself has, so we can observe Elasticsearch going down. And these two communicate through a shared memory mechanism. The first version of our observability implemented the shared memory abstraction using a tree where we organized all of the different kinds of work and all of the thread-based information into a tree. And we are replacing that with a single file, an append-only file, because the metadata overhead of maintaining a tree was pretty large. And this is the API. So it's a very simple API. You provide a metric name that you want to ask from the system at a given time, and you provide one or more or zero or more dimensions. So if you do provide, for example, CPU utilization as the metric, and you want to query it as a function of the shard ID and the index name or the node ID, this is how the output looks. It's given out as a table where you have the CPU utilization for every shard ID. So this kind of shows the interesting part of the observability, which is even for abstract resources in the database such as shards, we can measure CPU utilization, page fault rates, disk IO rates, heap allocation rates, the GC impact, and so on. So to give you an idea of some examples of the kinds of questions that we can ask using the Performance Analyzer observability module, one of them is, let's take all bulk activity on a given node in the cluster and give me all page fault rates and disk IO taken by bulk activity. And conversely, we can ask for all search activity or any async activity such as merges that Elasticsearch does. Or we can ask for CPU and heap allocation rates that all queries are triggering inside the database. Or we can ask for garbage collection, CPU usage, and page faults with garbage collection threads or activity on a given node on the cluster. So that's about the observability side. What we did meanwhile was also build a tool for real-time view of the cluster. So since these metrics are exposed at a 5-second granularity and they keep updating for every node and across the cluster, we wrote a tool that is similar to Top. We call it PerfTop. This is also open source in OpenDistro. This actually shows the activity of the database, and it's customizable. You can create your own dashboards. You can show the layouts of those dashboards. You can configure them dynamically. And this particular dashboard is one of the default out of 4 dashboards in PerfTop. And this talks to the observability module. And in this particular case, it is showing what is, for example, the CPU overhead of different operations that are being done. Then in this case, the bulk activity is taking more CPU than, for example, the garbage collector activity. It shows the same thing for disk I/O for writes. It shows the same thing as a function of the node. And the rest of the panes are talking about the workload in the database. So that's the observability side. Now we build on top of observability. Observability, by the way, is open source already. Now the rest of the talk, I'm going to talk about a proposal that we are putting out in the form of an RFC, and I'll give you the link in the end. This is a proposal. This is an architecture that we prototyped for doing root cause analysis, so we have an idea of how to go about building on top of observability to do real-time diagnosis. So root cause analysis is the problem of pinpointing what is actually going wrong among the sea of metrics, and we have thousands of metrics if you multiply by the number of dimensions for the observability module. So the first question in root cause analysis is, what is a root cause? And different people or entities have different ideas of root cause. Depending on your day-to-day experience, you might do root cause analysis and triaging differently, and you might ask different questions. But probably the more common one is phrased in terms of symptoms. And this is also done typically, for example, by doctors, where they look at your symptoms and they try to construct a diagnosis. And this is a very similar model. So essentially, these are the two equations that summarize how we attempt to do root cause analysis. A root cause is a function over one or more symptoms, and a root cause can also be a function on another root cause. And a symptom is a function over one or more metrics. And we can have aggregations on these metrics. So for example, we can have a time average on one of the metrics. We can have a time average on the symptom or the root cause itself. So given this definition, it's very natural to construct an abstraction of a streaming real-time implementation, and that would be a data flow graph. Essentially, any time a particular output is a function of an input, you can have a data flow between the input and the output. And so translating this exact two equations into a data flow graph, you can basically see this is supposed to be shaded, but the inputs to the data flow are the two metrics, and the outputs are the two root causes. And all of the different functions, the aggregation function, the symptom computation, the root cause analysis computation, they are all intermediate nodes in the data flow graph. So given a metric stream, which is the source nodes, we can essentially form this real-time streaming graph to compute the root causes in real time. So a few properties of this graph. So this data flow graph is essentially computing one or more root causes. And this is an abstraction that spans the entire cluster or a subset of the nodes. And on top of it, any of the data flow graph nodes, they can be limited only to one node. So a data flow graph node itself cannot span multiple nodes. And the graph itself is a directed acyclic graph. So in order to build the data flow abstraction or the data flow graph, we need to implement an RCA framework, because this is a guy who computes each and every node. This is a guy who streams the output of one node as input to the other node to do the entire data flow computation. So the RCA framework, this is a physical layout of how we went about implementing the framework. So there are two data nodes in the Elasticsearch cluster, and there is an elected master node. So Elasticsearch can have multiple master nodes, but it guarantees that at any point of time you can have only one master node that is elected by the cluster. So in this case, the stack looks like this. We have this sidecar process that I just described for observability. And on top of observability, we layer an RCA framework that does two things. It does scheduling of the different work that the data flow graph does for every node. And then it moves the input, the output of one node to the input of another node. And given that the data flow graph can span multiple nodes in the cluster, it needs to do network I/O as well to do the streaming. So as I mentioned, it does two units of work. It schedules work and it executes every node in the graph. And it passes opaque objects between any two nodes that are connected directly in the data flow graph. The guarantees that we attempted to build is, one is ordering. If two outputs from a node are ordered in time, they will be ordered in time in terms of delivery to the connected node as well. And the second thing is, we did an at most once delivery semantic, mainly because we didn't really need exactly once delivery. In the case of RCAs, typically these are statistically significant computations, which means that we need sufficient number of samples, so loss of a small number of samples does not really impact the accuracy of the root cause analysis itself. And how do nodes detect staleness and losses is through timestamps that the framework itself generates. The edges in the data flow graph are the framework implements a publish subscribe mechanism so the edges can subscribe to updates from upstream nodes or downstream nodes. And one advantage of having to specify all of this upfront is if there are data flow nodes in the data flow graph that do the same computation, then the framework can dedupe it and instantiate exactly one instance of each node. So that brings us to what is the developer interface for building a root cause analysis computation itself. And there are two components. One is you are essentially constructing a new node in the data flow graph, and you're connecting it to the rest of the data flow graph. So the first step is to implement an evaluate function, which is done by extending a class in the framework itself. So the framework can call your evaluate function. The input to the evaluate function is what is coming from the upstream node that you connected to. And the output that you generate from evaluate is sent in real time to the downstream node. On the graph construction itself, there is another class that you need to extend to essentially establish the edges between your node and the rest of the graph. One thing I didn't get into any detail is the framework also supports the notion of hyperparameters, thresholds, and configuration for a particular data flow node itself. And that can be done externally through a threshold configuration file. So the output of the RCA is simple. This is our API specification. You essentially make a call to any of the agents on the cluster, and it returns the set of RCAs on the entire cluster. So the output will be the RCA name, and it will include some context that you can build in the data node itself when you establish the data flow graph, and it returns that with the RCA, and it returns the timestamp. So put everything together, I'm going to give an example of a single RCA. This is the last slide. And this RCA is attempting to find shards that are hot. And hotness is defined in terms of the CPU usage of the shards in the database. So let's start with a data node. So this is a data node. It has an Elasticsearch process. And there are two thread pools that I'm showing here, which is for writes and reads. And the first step is observability, where you construct two timelines. And for the case of high CPU usage, the subset of observability that we are interested in is the CPU usage. So for each thread, it measures the CPU, and it looks at the events and the shard IDs for those events. So the RCA starts by picking up the CPU usage for every shard on the data node, and it sends it through an aggregation function that aggregates over 1 minute intervals. The same thing on a different data node, it has its own set of shards, it does observability, and it does RCA. And on the elected master node, of course the master node has its own observability, and Elasticsearch master nodes have their own performance issues, but they don't have any shards because they are not serving data or writing data. So in this particular case, what is of interest to us in the data flow graph is what happens on the master node. So the master node aggregates and accumulates the outputs in real time of all the data nodes, and it does a sliding window on it. It puts a threshold on the CPU usage to filter out shards that have lower than the threshold CPU, and it picks the top K shards, and that's the output of the RCA. It's showing the top K high CPU shards across the cluster. So that's in a nutshell a real-life example, and high CPU shards are something that's very common in our operations as well. So I'll end the talk with talking about the RFC. We have a request for comments that is out there in the Performance Analyzer repository. You can go to the GitHub and find the RCA directory in Performance Analyzer. This document is already out there. We have a GitHub issue in Performance Analyzer. Probably the latest issue right now will be the RFC issue itself. So feel free to add comments. We are looking for your insights on your experience with databases, with Elasticsearch in particular, and how you would think about if you were to implement the RCA framework, what kind of RCAs do you have in mind? And of course, code is something that we always welcome. We all welcome contributions. So that's the talk. Thanks.